This hour of Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. This is Overdrive on TSN 1050.
So I think I'm getting soft. Yeah, I'll tell you why. Gord Miller's in here. Brian Hayes. I was off yesterday. I'm back today. But, yeah.
Why would you take Wednesday off?
It was a family thing. It wasn't a planned thing.
It's an odd thing to do.
Yeah, believe me. It wasn't in the works for a while. It was a last-minute thing. Okay. I had to take it off. So I knew I was coming back today. And because I knew everything was going to kind of get back to normal, I had booked a round of golf with my dad and his buddy a while ago. And I went out and played this morning. And I know I'm getting soft, and I know my 30-year-old self, 20-year-old self, let alone 12, 13-year-old self, when I first started playing golf, would just smack me to hear this. Hate me for this kind of take. I'm into the 12-hole rounds.
You know,
I'm an absolute proponent of that.
You know what? I'm with you.
I can't do 18 anymore.
I was an avid golfer, and I was half decent at it. But I got to tell you, I found myself 3 years ago playing golf and saying to myself after 12 holes, I wish this was over.
Yes.
And then thinking to myself, why am I doing something that I wish was over, that costs this much, that takes this much time?
Mm-hmm.
So I hate to say this, I've kind of retired from golf. Like I'll play, I played in a charity golf tournament a month ago for wounded soldiers. So I played in that. I emcee Bobby Orr's golf tournament up in Parry Sound. That's in August. That's probably the only two times I'll play golf this year.
Yeah.
And you know what? To be honest, I hate to say this. I don't miss it.
No.
I don't.
I had that feeling today, man.
The most popular thing at my golf club used to be 9 and 9. On Friday night, you tee off at like, I don't know, 4:30, play 9, have dinner. It's too long. It's too expensive. So my wife plays tennis, and she's a good tennis player, and I play tennis with her. If I want Roger Federer's racket, strung the way Roger Federer has it. I mean, you know, I wouldn't do that, but if I did, it's about $350. That's one club.
Mm-hmm.
That's a 3-wood.
Right. Yeah. No. Exactly. I mean, there's so many different reasons for it. I'm not even talking about the money though. So much. I just found I ran out of gas. Like that's the truth. It's been such a hot summer. It's too hot out there.
Yeah.
So by like 11 a.m., 11:30, it's scorching. And I think it's time. I think it's maybe it's recency bias because I didn't play that well. It's my first round. I haven't been playing a lot the past couple of years because ever since I had a kid, I just haven't found time for it.
Well,
so when you're not playing that well anyway, then you start to kind of turn on the game.
But I have a hard time, too, being away all winter and then saying, hon, I'm going to be gone for 8 hours.
Right, exactly.
But like it's a great game. It's got a real problem. Golf has a real issue.
Mm-hmm.
Not many young people are playing it.
I think 12 holes would do it, man. I think you change the whole landscape of golf if you turn it into a front six, a middle six, a back six, and that's how you play the game. So I'm going out to play six instead of nine. I'm going to play 12. If you want to play 18, you can play 18.
Go ahead. Now, you just got to make sure the layout at 12 gets you to the clubhouse.
Right, basically, you got to make sure.
At a lot of courses, 12, like the 12th green would be
you're way out there.
Be as far away from the clubhouse as you can get, right?
Yeah, I mean, you're talking about, this is somewhat of a fantasy right now, but I do think actually it would go a long way. Someone should have this foresight.
Did you walk?
I didn't walk today, even though we were planning on it, I had the surgery on my knee like 9 months ago. I haven't played since, so I didn't want to walk 4 or 5 holes, and then my knee starts to bark away, and I'm like, I'm stuck out here. So,
you know what the other problem I have with golf, specifically here, and most places, a lot of places in Canada, is we don't have golf clubs that have a lot of other stuff. You know what I mean? So basically, if you want to go play golf, and your wife wants to play tennis, and you want to put your daughter in a swimming lesson, you can't do that.
Right.
You know, there
that is big, having clubs for the whole family.
There aren't many places you can do that. Bayview, I think, is one. There aren't many clubs where you can do that.
Yeah, right? Lambton, I think, has tennis courts.
Yeah, so like Scarborough, where I played, is a golf club. It's curling, too.
Well, you realize why, though. Because it was the boys created the club a long time ago, and the wives can't come, and the kids can't come.
But guys, things have changed, right?
Absolutely,
But they don't want to get rid of the curling rink, and they don't want to... Like, if you could say, I'll go play golf, you play tennis, daughter's in swimming, meet you afterwards, I'm in. But where we play tennis, first of all, I mean, where we play tennis, we live downtown or midtown, so we can be at the tennis club in 10 minutes mm-hmm. on bikes.
Well, and that's the truth, right? Golfing, you're driving 45 minutes wherever you want to go.
Play for an hour. Good exercise.
Mm-hmm.
It's good exercise. Social. Lots of people can play it, right? Have lunch afterwards, and you're home in like an hour and 45 minutes. It's a real. I think you're onto the time issue, because that's the one thing a lot of parents talk about as a barrier in minor hockey. It's not the money. It's not safety. It's not people yelling at you. It's the time commitment. People are terrified of it.
Yes.
It takes over your life.
Well, and especially in the summer now, like that's a big thing. Bobby Orr was talking about that recently this week, I believe, where he's urging parents, don't have your kids play hockey all year round. No. You know? And what I found interesting about his quote is one that I don't think gets brought up enough. It's not about a break from hockey. It's about experiencing something else.
Yeah.
So play other sports, but it's not only about playing the other sports. And a lot of times that's what gets caught up in this whole conversation is, well, he's not great at baseball or she's not great at soccer or whatever. It's not about that. Doesn't it's matter. That you're with different kids, different coaches, different programs, different parents. You travel to different parts of the city, etc. So it's a whole new experience. It's fresh for kids.
And
I fully support that
and
idea.
And you think about like guys like Gary Roberts, Brendan Shanahan, Adam Foote. Those guys were great lacrosse players. Wayne Gretzky was a really good baseball player. Peter Zezel was a really good soccer player, right? I'm with you. And this idea that, you know what the worst thing that happened was? Malcolm Gladwell's book that talked about the 10,000 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So this idea that people, you know, he found that people that were successful at something had put 10,000 hours into it. So now parents are like, got diaries out, you know, how many thousands of hours? I got news for you. For most of you, your kid could do 100,000 hours or something. They're probably not going to play pro doing it.
Talent is, it's either there or it's not.
Talent and effort.
Yes. Effort's a big part of it.
Effort's a big part.
They have the drive. And it's not so much at a young age. It's once they get to 14, 15, 16, do you have the ability as a kid to push beyond that? Because you may be as talented as the other guy, but that kid is still fully committed and loves the game and wants to work at it the way that he did 10 years ago. And you've hit a point in your life where you don't want to do that anymore.
And looping back to your golf conversation, one of the problems with golf is it's a very hard sport to just pick up. It's a very hard thing to not play for a month,
right?
And then go play golf.
I'm a perfect example of that. Like, again, this is probably recency bias, and we're coming out of the gate hot with all this, although I like that you support that idea. I like that there are other people that are kind of thinking along the lines of shortening this up.
I think there's lots of people, like, you know, they could be walking around the course. I like to walk when I play and say, I'm about done. Like, yeah, me too.
I completely ran out of gas. Now, again, maybe because after my knee surgery, I haven't been doing a lot. It's my first time playing all year. I didn't play that well. So it's not like I was chasing a personal record. We weren't gambling or anything like that, which can maintain the interest level for a guy like me. You know, if we're playing skins or whatever, then I'll be into it. We could play 50 holes, and I'll probably still be into it. But today I found I hit about 13, 14, and I was like, I'm done. I can't believe I got another four holes.
Yeah.
Get me out of here. I don't even want to be here anymore.
And that's another hour.
Exactly. Right. It's not a video game where it's like, oh, we got one more period. It's 5 minutes real time. This is an hour real time.
Yeah. So I don't know what
I don't know what they do. But
I don't know what the answer is because, you know, I wonder if baseball doesn't have the same problem in terms of people watching it.
Without question.
You know, the idea of sitting. I mean, we were talking the other day about Bill Mazeroski's home run. In the 1960 World Series, right? The famous Pittsburgh Pirates home run.
Mm-hmm.
You know how long that game was? 2 hours and 8 minutes. It was a 10-9 game.
How did that happen?
That's what baseball games were like then. But the problem is now, especially in the American League, in-inning pitching changes, right?
All the time.
Like, I mean, in the National League, you get a few more pitching changes between innings because a guy's going to pinch hit for the pitcher, so you make the change. But these 3 hour and 15 minute games, someone in the Washington Post wrote a thing last week leading up to the All-Star game because, you know, hits are down a little bit, right? There's more home runs. So the average baseball game now, I think, has 17 hits and is 3 hours long. If you do the math on that, that's a hit every 11 minutes.
That's not going to cut it.
It's a long time to go.
I think what the pushback from baseball is, well, we're in a different cycle, and Scotty was talking about this on his show a couple of hours ago, and eventually everything will turn back, and you'll see more stolen bases, you'll see more balls in play, you'll see more of an emphasis on you know, batting average or whatever it might be. But I'm not convinced that's going to be the case because analytics have led us here, right? And analytics are not going to leave the game of baseball. People understand what gets you paid and what gets you wins
and,
for the most part.
And they exactly. And so analytics don't say, oh, this is more entertaining.
Exactly.
It doesn't allow for it. Fans will like this better. No, it's what wins.
Right.
And I think there's another issue in baseball that is the idea that, like, if you're in the American League East, you know, unless you're spending $235 million, you're not going to compete.
Well, and that's why those two seasons for the Blue Jays were so special, and I wouldn't go back and change anything.
Right.
Because there is some revisionist history going on. Like, should they have made that trade? Should they have taken on the Tulowitzki contract? Should they have done this, that, or the other? And, yes, absolutely. I know they're kind of paying for it right now, but in reality, Boston was going to get to this point anyway. And Boston was great for those 2 years anyway, for the most part. And the Yankees, yeah, they had a bit of a dip, but they were going to find their way again. Like,
and the Blue Jay payroll's not that much different
than
the
Yankees. No, it's not. They've been top 10 for years.
Yeah, it's not that much different than the Yankees, but the Red Sox are, what, $50 million ahead? Roughly,
and they're up against the luxury tax, or they're even beyond it, I believe. It's complicated the way baseball works with the luxury tax and everything, and it continues to change. And they're trying to change that to make it a bit more of an equal playing field. But if you don't have a cap, this is what's going to happen.
And so what I would say is, I'm not arguing for the video game generation where everything's a 1 minute clip. I'm not saying that, but I'm saying that in this era, I think you have to recognize that if your game is taking more than 3 hours to play, it's too long. Like, I got to say, I love the NBA. And a lot of the reasons I love the NBA is, number one, when you go to see a good player play, you will see him at his best.
Yes.
Like, when you go to watch Steph Curry play, he'll score 25.
And he's playing 40 minutes, more than 40, likely.
He's playing 40 minutes. And an NBA game's over in 2 hours.
Well,
pretty close. I mean, two... change.
We had this discussion earlier in the week I was at the Jays game on Saturday, and I said, you know, it was amazing. It was quite the experience for me because I was lucky enough. We were at a bachelor party. We were up in a suite, so we had access to a TV, and the Croatia-Russia game was on.
Right.
So we're watching that. Now, that's the World Cup, and it was a serious game.
And the
Jays are out of it. I mean, no one's going to sit there and be like, I can't wait to see the next Blue Jay game.
But you paid to be at the Blue Jay game.
Yes.
And it was to watch a soccer game on TV.
And to put this in a different context, if we didn't have access to the TV, we would have been rattled sitting in the seats, thinking, I'm missing out. I really, really want to watch this. But the juxtaposition between the two sports was what really, really was highlighted, because I said this earlier in the week, the first two innings took something like 54 minutes to play, something along those lines, where soccer, if it ends in real time, so if it doesn't take the extra 30 minutes and go into penalties, it's two hours. Under 2 hours.
Because it's halftime is 15.
And we've experienced it all month, right? Yeah. Games have started at 2 p.m. We've been on the air at 4 p.m. because the games are done before 4 p.m.
Right.
And you can argue, you can have a different take on the sport. And there are people that love baseball and always will. There are people that love soccer, always will. People that hate soccer, hate baseball, etc. The timing is something that is indisputable.
And
in soccer, they've mastered it.
And the thing is, Brian, that people who love the sport are great, but there aren't enough of them to make it go. So if only hardcore baseball fans are going to go to baseball games and watch them on TV, there aren't enough of them. You need to attract the casual sports fan, the one who might watch a game a week, right? And you got to get them hooked and say, yeah, this is worth investing my time, but not too much of it.
It can't drag. No, it can't.
And the thing that's funny is the NFL in-stadium experience is so much worse than the experience on television.
It's the biggest night and day experience.
So when you see an NFL game and a touchdown is scored, okay? So they have a touchdown point after, they go down to break. They come back, kickoff, almost always a touchback, back down to break, come back. If you're in the stadium for 4 minutes, you've seen a touchback. You've sat in the stadium and you've seen a touchback in 4 minutes.
But here's the difference. Football, if you're going to the games, you're going to eight games all year.
And they play eight home games in the NFL, and you also go for 8 hours. You tailgate before.
Tailgate's a big part of it.
You have the game, and then, I mean, some people, I'm convinced, go to the tailgate and don't go into the stadium.
Oh, I know that for a fact, because some guys can't get in. You know, some people are so polluted, it's like you get up there and the security's like, well, dude, I've been watching you for 6 hours.
I'm
going
to call you on that. I'd like to see how drunk you'd have to be not to get into a Bills game. Because I've gone to lots of Bills games. There are people that have both eyes in one socket.
Just puddled.
That get in.
Puddled.
When I first moved to Toronto 28 years ago, I went to the Dome for a baseball game. And you can only buy two beers at the time. And I went to Buffalo for the first NFL game I was at. And there was like 10 of us. I said, how many beers can I buy? I said, I don't know. How many can you carry?
How much cash do you have?
I'll say 100 beers if you want. Can you carry them?
Take whatever you want.
Yeah.
You're right. And the Ralph has that kind of reputation, although yeah. I think it's new era field now.
Yeah, I think they've tried to
update with the times.
So basically what we're saying is move it along.
Yeah.
Like make it snappy.
If there are constant games, you know, like baseball, there's 81 home games. NHL, NBA, there's 41. Football, I do think, is different. You know, football is different because it's an experience, because there's only so many home games a year. Quite frankly, I think football is evolving. I don't think we're too far away from them just getting rid of the kickoff. They're just going to plant it on the 25-yard line and you move on just because of player safety and concussions and stuff like that.
You know my rule change for football?
What's that?
Whoever scores the touchdown has to kick the point after.
So, like, if a wide receiver catches it?
Yeah. Don't move it back to kick it from the 25.
Why do you hate on kickers? Don't hate on kickers.
And
you realize that they're not going to have a job if you take them out of the equation.
But they all make them. I mean, they make the point after all. Now, they've moved it back further out.
They've tried to. Yeah. And the numbers have been somewhat negligible, frankly.
Make the guy that scored the touchdown. Get back to your rugby roots.
Well,
I'm kidding. But I mean,
but what would be crazy about that is the gambling angle to all of this.
Hey, listen. I think you're onto something, though. We talked about this a couple weeks ago. I think What's gonna save or enliven the in-game experience is gonna be gambling.
Mm-hmm.
You'll be on your phone, you know. Guy's gonna shoot a free throw. Does he make or miss? Bang.
Well, I just said it too about my own personal life with golf. Like if we were playing for money today, I would have a much different slant.
So 3 years.
But not everyone wants to do that, and I understand that. But I do personally.
3 years ago, I'm doing a game in Edmonton. Okay, so this is before the Oilers have made the playoffs, the season before. So they've been last for every year and all that stuff. So it's the third period, crowd's still there, right? And the second commercial break, so the one after 10 minutes into the period, they do the 50-50 draw. People stand up. So as soon as the whistle goes, people are standing up. They're putting on their coats. They've got their tickets out. And as soon as they read the 50-50 numbers, it's like somebody yelled skunk. Like they're out of there. The place, like 10,000 people left in the next 3 minutes.
Yeah.
Right? They're gone.
Yep.
Because they got the 50-50.
Waited for the numbers.
So now if you can bet on... You know, if you got a bet on your phone, and it's like, you know, you got six goals, the over-under is 6.5 goals, right? And there's 6 goals scored. You're sticking around.
You have to wait. You're right. Absolutely. That's the beauty of football. Like the NFL and college football and the CFL to a lesser extent, although they don't really cash in as much as the NFL does. But that's why, like, you watch Al Michaels. When Michaels calls Sunday night game,
he's
always like, you might want to stick around for this. Like
the over-under's 51.
You know exactly what he's doing. You know exactly what he means. And he knows that there are degenerates out there.
No,
they can't wait for it.
And he's probably one of them.
He probably is. Well, how would you feel about that? I mean, you've been in that position before. If gambling becomes legalized, if the sports world gets into bed with the casinos and the numbers, et cetera, would you add that to your call?
I have referred to that at times in games. Now, hockey gambling is a little different.
Very different.
It's not the same. But I've referred to that in a blowout game, like you know, the only thing left here to decide is the over under or something like that. I mean, I bet on sports. I'm not a hypocrite about it. It's legal. I mean, the government's in the sports betting business. You do picks.
Right.
You do your picks.
OLG. That's the Ontario government.
So I mean, I think for sure. I mean, I love when Al Michaels does that because it's his little way of saying, stop being such hypocrites.
Oh, NFL's the worst for hypocrisy.
That's his wink to you saying, we all know what's going on here, so why don't we just say what it is?
Let's all be adults about this. That's always been my take on this, because some people have the most extreme reaction to gambling. They take the most extreme outcome. Yeah. Someone's going to lose their house, their family, their car. Could that potentially happen? It might. 99% of people, that's not going to happen.
He might get into a card game at Senior Steakhouse and do the same thing.
That's the truth, too. That guy who's losing everything on the game was going to lose it anyway because he was finding someone to bet with. The bets are going to happen anyway. In reality, the majority of people are going to walk into the stadium, put $20 down, and leave.
And hope
to win $100.
This started with golf takes too long.
Yeah, basically. That's radio, man. This is the way it goes.
I like this. This never happens on TV.
No. Like, well, when would you ever have the opportunity to spend 20 minutes just winging it?
I will say this. When Ray Ferraro and I do games, we have a rule. especially international hockey, when it gets to be a six-goal spread, trivia time.
So who is posing the trivia?
I'm posing the trivia questions, and he has to answer them.
I don't think I've ever picked up on that.
Oh, no?
Oh, I'm sure I've seen you guys do it before.
Yeah, we've announced it on the air. Like, we'll say, like, one more goal for trivia time.
Really?
And it keeps you... I remember one time doing a game and saying it was like 11 to nothing. And saying, you know, if your remote control doesn't work, there are buttons on the side of the TV where you can change the channel. but they don't like it when I say it.
No, generally, I wouldn't think TSN would like that. You know what you should do next time? Maybe not a six-goal spread. This would have to be really, really extreme. But if it hits like 10, just start gambling on the rest of the game between the two of you.
We have had on-air bets. There was one time, I swear to God, 3 years ago, Nashville was pounding Toronto in Toronto. It was like 9-1.
Oh, I remember that game. That was after they had lost to the Sabres.
Yes.
Like six. That was the salute gate. Like the reaction to that was salute gate.
Yeah. So I asked Ray a question. Now, sometimes what happens on television is you ask someone a question and the producer's talking to them, so they don't hear you. Like when you hear people on TV repeat each other, echo each other, it's because they didn't hear the guy because someone was talking to him. So I asked Ray a question. I looked down. He's propped up against the back wall between the benches. He's reading Twitter. Like he was completely disengaged.
Yes. I find that quite funny. When Ray jumps on Twitter and generally claps back at some idiot who's chirped him about something.
It's the best.
But within seconds of you guys going to commercial, which I understand there's probably a delay, but it can't be that substantial, which means there's a pretty good chance you were wrapping up the play or the period, and he was already on there making sure that he had a bullet in the chamber.
We got to go, but when we come back, I'll tell you my little secret sign that I send out on TV.
Okay.
I'll reveal the secret sign that I send out on TV.
Big, big, big time reveal here.
That was you taught me this last week.
Okay.
That's our little...
Yes.
A little tease.
The old tease. Here we go. And Rachel Nichols coming up. Speaking of gambling, there's a Raptor slant to this.
I know.
You're going to want to hear this.
I don't get this.
Well, I'll try to explain it to everybody. I think I've got it figured out.
Okay, good.
We'll get to that next. Overdrive is delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com. Rachel Nichols of ESPN will join us on the Raptors, Kawhi Leonard, a website, odds, gambling. There's a lot to unpack there.
Yeah.
But you teased us beautifully about what goes on with your whole routine.
If you're listening to the first 5 minutes of a game that I'm doing, and you hear an odd word, like a word that kind of goes, it doesn't seem to make sense. That's because I'm saying hi to someone. Usually someone in the hospital, but someone will say, hey, can you say hi to my son? He's not feeling well. I'd say, I can't do that, but tell him to give me a word.
Really?
And I'll say it, and that's saying hi to him.
So someone reaches out to you. You respond, you say, hook me up with a word. They have to come up with something obscure. Like,
well, it can be anything. It can't be a proper name, and it can't be cursing, obviously.
Have they come back with a word where you said, it's not possible for me to mix that in? Like, I'm calling a hockey game here. There's no way I can mix that in.
No.
You've always found a way.
Yes.
Okay. So now we have to look out for that.
Yeah. You come up with one. I'll do it for you this year.
All right.
You come up with one, and I'll get it in.
Okay. Now, I hope I'm not in a hospital when you're doing it.
But the audience has to figure out what the word was. But yeah, so like...
Okay, here's what we'll do. When you're calling a Leaf game...
Okay.
That day...
I'll say Tavares.
Yes, please do something like that. Matthews to Tavares. That's saying hello to me. On the air that day, we'll come up with it, we'll send it to you, and then you try to mix it in. Yep. Well, I guess you will mix it in. This is what you do. All right, we'll get to that, I guess, in the fall when the Leafs are actually back and playing.
Let's not do it now.
It's not going to happen between now and the end of the show. Rachel Nichols from ESPN in 2 minutes. Jays Red Sox tonight. We'll tee that up later in the afternoon.
Are we on
TV
right now?
Sox. No, we're not on TV.
I put my feet
up
again. Okay.
Yeah, you can do that whenever you want.
Took my feet off the desk and kind of. I was kind of channeling my inner O-Dog there. Has there been an O-Dog sighting lately?
No. Heard from him a couple of times via text. He called me a couple of days ago. He's up north. He's getting bored. I knew that was coming.
Oh, because you know, I mean, honestly, like he's got the attention span of a fly.
And yes.
He's up at the cottage. Like, what's he going to do?
He's not going to last up there. He claimed he was going up for 9 weeks straight. He'll be back by the end of next week, and then he'll be in Toronto the rest of the summer, and he'll be miserable. But That's how he rolls, man. Our next guest was in Vegas, I believe, for an extended period of time, too, right? Like, the Summer League is it's a great gig.
I gotta
it's
say,
such a great gig going to cover the Summer League.
I don't understand it, but it's a great gig.
Yes, it's perfect. She is Rachel Nichols from ESPN and the host of ESPN's The Jump, and I believe making her debut on Overdrive. How you doing, Rachel?
I'm fine. First of all, you're completely right about... Well, okay. First of all, up at the cottage is the most Toronto expression ever. Second of all, Summer League in Vegas is an experience I would advise everyone to partake of. It's sort of the NBA's version of going to spring training. Like, it's a good kind of family thing. Tickets are super cheap. It's like $6 to get in or whatever. I will say Las Vegas in the summer is not necessarily your dream weather scenario. It was 112 degrees when I left yesterday. And people who will tell you it's a dry heat, guess what? Okay. 112 degrees, still hot.
Right.
So there's that. But it is fun, and I would say about Summer League is that you want to go. It's cool. You have all 30 teams there now. You really do. It's the only place in the entire year you get to see everyone, because the NBA Finals, you're just seeing the people who are in the NBA Finals. Even the All-Star Game is just the most elite players. At the Summer League, you get all 30 coaches, all 30 GMs. You get players of all different ilks. But the key is, don't let yourself stay there for more than a week. You'll never leave.
Well, see, that's what I've always found fascinating about this. These players that are there, this is huge for them. They have to perform. Like, a lot of hype comes out of this.
Yeah, for sure.
And for a lot of the rookies, I mean, it's their first opportunity to prove who they are and what they are. Yet, they finally got some money. They're in Vegas. They might be 21. It's got to be enticing, Rachel, wouldn't you think? I mean, when you're on the Strip, do you see any of these guys after games, like hitting clubs, or
They don't all play every day.
Right.
So there's some built-in time for them to have fun and be kids. And it's supposed to be fun, right? I mean, it's supposed to be good. It's the off-season. It's good to give these guys some time to blow off steam. And you see a lot of the veterans, too. What I think is so interesting about Summer League is it's become a destination for veterans on these teams to come, quote, support the young guys, which means that they come to the game, they sit sort of in that front bench area for, you know, about 20, 30 minutes. Then they've done their thing. They've been photographed. They've given the attaboy, we can't wait to have you on the team. And then they go hit the clubs and the Strip, and it's great. Works out great for everyone.
Now, remember, Rachel, when Lonzo Ball had the tough time in Summer League? Like, it was like, I think he hit two shots in his first game, and it was like national news.
Absolutely, and then he had a great, later in Summer League, he had a great run. And Lonzo Ball did wonders for Summer League. The attendance last year was off the charts because L.A. is so close to Las Vegas, you can drive. So, you know, the idea that there was Lakers excitement finally for the first time in a long time with a young Laker, of course, I'm sure we're about to get into. There's an excitement now in Lakerland with an older new Laker. but at that time, obviously, Lonzo was sort of their first breath of fresh air in a while and all the hoopla that went with him. So it was a big boost to Summer League ticket sales. And I don't think the gate has been quite as good this year because that was a little bit of an anomaly, but it's still very super strong. They're drafting off that and it's only getting bigger every year. It's a cool event.
With Rachel Nichols of ESPN. So we wanted to get into this Kawhi Leonard stuff because it's caused a big stir up here in Toronto. And there's a website, oddsharks.com, and they've listed the Raptors now as the favorite outside of the Spurs for who Kawhi would play with next year. And I'm not sure where that's coming from. I don't know if they got a scoop or if Raptors fans are just hammering futures down in Vegas. And like the casinos are like, we have to adjust the lines because if this actually comes to fruition, we're in big trouble. But I think it makes a ton of sense because The Raptors have just always been an outpost in the NBA. They've never had a guy who would be considered a top three or five player in the league. Even Vince, at his height, wasn't a top three or five guy.
Mm-hmm.
I'd be all in on this. What would your reaction be if it actually happened, if Masai swung big and landed this guy and Kawhi became a Raptor?
Yeah, I mean, first of all, kudos to you for pointing out that when the odds shift, it's not always because the probability shifts.
Right.
That's one of the things that drives me crazy. People are like, hey, look, the Lakers are now 7-2 favorites to win the title, behind Golden State to win the title. I'm like, that's just because that's where the money is coming in. They're not actually better than Houston. I think you do always have to take that into account. Maybe that kind of stuff is moving the odds. That being said, I thought it was fascinating that DeMar DeRozan's Instagram account is now blank. There used to be pictures on there, including pictures of his Raptor stuff, and now there is not. And it could be for any reason, right? Who knows? Who knows why he decided to clear his Instagram? But it's been cleaned, so that's interesting to me. I don't know where this is coming from. I do think it's interesting, this idea of maybe going to get him, even though I highly doubt you could get any kind of guarantee from Kawhi or his people ahead of time that he would sign an extension. And that's really been the roadblock for a lot of teams like Toronto and last year Oklahoma City when they were looking into Paul George. You're not getting a guarantee that this guy is going to stay with you. So you are giving up, in some cases, a lot, and he might just be a rental. Oklahoma City took a swing, and Sam Presti, the GM there, was very open. He said, look, he's like, we're not even getting the big free agent meetings. Like, when these big free agents are coming up, I can't even get them to come here and meet. So I have to take a huge risk, trade for a guy like Paul George. Turned out he traded away even more than people thought at the time, because Victor Oladipo had this great career resurgence, and Nick Sabonis looked good, and all of that stuff. So he made this huge trade. If Paul George had walked away for nothing, can you imagine sort of the public pressure on Sam Presti? But he said, hey, I think the best recruiting we can do in a market like Oklahoma City is just get him in here, have him play here for a year, show him what a good, solid organization we are, show him that this city and this town is more fun than he thinks it is, and that he'd have a great life for his family. And it worked. They did a 9-month sell job on him, and he signed a 4-year contract. So it is a model, maybe, for a city like Toronto, which is, of course, you know, 100 times more cosmopolitan than a place like Oklahoma City. But as you say, for one reason or another, hasn't been able to attract free agents in the same way. To maybe take a page from that book and say, hey, maybe we get him in here for a year, and he loves it.
Well, I think that's exactly what the pitch would be. And, you know, we talked about the Lakers earlier in the conversation, and Paul George was connected to them forever, right? L.A. Right. boy who basically...
He said it. He came out and said it, that he wanted to play for his childhood favorite team, the Lakers.
Exactly. And by all accounts, that door was still open to him. I mean, obviously, they were looking into LeBron, and they ended up signing LeBron, but George decided, I'm not even going to get to that point. I'm going to return to Oklahoma City. And that's what makes this Kawhi Leonard stuff so interesting, because he's connected to teams in the East because the Spurs may want to keep him out of the West, and maybe the Lakers, they have enough confidence that he will end up as a free agent and will end up wanting to go to the Lakers, and they're willing to wait and gamble again. But I'm not sure that makes a lot of sense. Like,
yeah,
I think
the
Lakers
Paul George
need more.
Example, yeah, the Paul George right. example on the Lakers side is a lesson to them. Here's
right.
a guy who said openly, I want to play for the Lakers, I want to play for L.A. And really, I mean, look, conventional wisdom swings a lot in the NBA, right? You kind of get into a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation. A lot of people were telling the Lakers last year, hey, guys, don't rush out and trade for Paul George. He's coming anyway in a year, right? What's he going to do, stay in Oklahoma City? Ha, ha, ha. Don't try to make some big deal for him. Because look what happened with Denver and Carmelo Anthony and the New York Knicks. Carmelo made it very clear he wanted to come to New York. He forced a trade when, in fact, if New York had just waited 3/4 of the season, they could have gotten him, quote, for free, you know, getting a free agent as a free agent signing, and then they wouldn't have had to strip their team. And Masai, of all people, is the one who just, you know, did some highway robbery on the New York Knicks to get Denver as much as they could for Carmelo Anthony. And people were telling the Lakers, don't do that with Paul George. Don't trade away half your team. You want to have a good team when he gets there, right? So just wait him out. Well, they waited him out, and they didn't even get a meeting with him. They didn't even get a meeting with Paul George. And certainly they wanted him to come. They wanted him there with LeBron. So it's a lesson kind of on both sides. Every situation is different. There is no right answer, because it could go the Paul George way or it could go the Carmelo Anthony way. But it is interesting, and if you see a team like Toronto, which, you know, number one seed in the Eastern Conference, most successful season ever last season, but didn't do what they wanted to do in the playoffs. We saw them change the coach. There may be a feeling in the front office, you know what, we got to change the roster too, and that might mean taking a big risk.
So, Rachel, how big is the risk, and where, in your opinion, would NBA people put the Raptors if, just say it's Kawhi Leonard for DeRozan, that's the that's the nuts of the deal. What would you say that would make the Raptors then?
In terms of what? Make them what kind of team they would be in the East?
Would they be considered a much better team, like a favorite to win the East then, again?
You know, one of the big questions, I think no matter what they do, I think the Celtics, if everyone is healthy, are going to be the favorites in the East. That doesn't mean that they will win the East, by the way. That's not how this works. They have to actually play the games. But I think the Celtics will be the heavy favorites in the East. That being said, of course, Toronto makes a huge move like this, it's going to get a ton of attention. The question with Kawhi, and we don't know, and that's the other wild card in all these trades, what is going on with his health? Because right. you look at his injury, it's not an injury that would normally cause a bunch of red flags, right? It's not like, oh, I mean, look, he's still Kawhi Leonard. He just turned 27. I think people think of him as older than he is because he has sort of quiet, mature demeanor. Yeah. He just, 4 or 5 days ago, turned 27. He is 27 years old, a two-time Defensive Player of the Year, a two-time MVP finalist, an Finals MVP. That is who you are trading for, potentially. But he only played 9 games last season. 9. So you can't trade for him and then have him not play for you, especially if he's a, quote, one-year rental. So the question is, hey, the injury doesn't seem like it should have been that serious, and he should be fine for training camp, but he only played 9 games last year, and even the Spurs couldn't really figure out what was going on there.
Rachel, we miss you on the hockey beat.
I miss being on the hockey beat. I love covering hockey. Now, I cover the Washington Capitals for the Washington Post, and I grew up in Washington, D.C., so it's kind of like if someone grows up in Toronto and then they get to go cover the Leafs. For me, I covered them the only other year they went to the Stanley Cup Finals, where they got, as I'm sure some of you remember, tragically swept by the Detroit Red Wings mm-hmm. in a very lopsided affair that saw Game 4 being, complete washout of Red Wings fan in the Capitals arena. So it was so awesome for me to see what happened with them this year. I was totally there for all of Ovi's celebrations with the Stanley Cup, his 8-day, 12-day, is it still going on, 62-day drunken bender. I'm in. Totally
yeah.
in.
Ovi, he's taken the whole it's my cup thing to a completely different level. Like, even during the parades, he wouldn't let anybody else hold the cup.
Yeah. Like, I believe it's in the Czech Republic now two of the other guys. He's finally loosened his grip, but Philip it is Grubauer's funny to see it being passed around Europe.
Philip Grubauer is going to get that cup for like 8 minutes.
Right.
Well, he's not even on the team anymore. He's a backup goalie. Like, see you later. Great having you on, Rachel. We'll have to do it again down the road. Thank you.
Absolutely. Thank you so much.
There's Rachel Nichols, host of ESPN's The Jump. Yeah, Ovi, I mean, that set a totally new bar in terms of how a player reacts to winning a Stanley Cup and how connected they get to the cup.
And tell me again how Russians don't care. Like, seriously.
Yeah, he obviously
did. That's such a stupid thing to say.
He obviously did.
Stupid, but that really is a stupid thing to say.
I don't know if it was ever, though, about, like, celebrating when you won. That
no,
they didn't care from that standpoint. It was more
in
the moment.
They lost out. He was on the first plane to the World Championship.
Yeah.
So were lots of Canadians.
Yeah. Right? That take has always been bogus.
No one got mad at Ryan Ellis and Sidney Crosby when they came over after their team lost. Mm-hmm. Like, no one got mad at them.
No, you're right. That whole take that they're passionate about getting home and playing and they're allowed to. Their season's over. They can do whatever they want. That's just cheap shots. But I think it's also more just kind of humor. Like, I would goof on them, too. Like, when they choke out every single year, I'd be like, get that guy on the first plane back over the World Hockey Championships.
You just said they choke out every year?
Well, they did outside of this year, notwithstanding, clearly.
Do they not get a free pass after winning the Stanley Cup?
They do now, Gord. Okay. But that team was... They choked out year after
they
year
They lost
after
to
year.
Pittsburgh every time.
Still. Eventually, you got to win. Now, eventually, they did. And now they have a Stanley Cup. So they're no longer choke artists.
It's not the Stanley Cup, by the way, that they were awarded. I think it's I think it's been altered.
Sort of. Yeah, it has to be, right? Yeah. That's got to be a replica. It can't be the real thing.
It's the real one.
But there's no way Ovi's, like, sleeping with the real one.
Yes.
I find that hard to believe.
Absolutely. I'm telling
you. So you're telling me the guy with the gloves is sitting there, like, snuggling with Ovi because he has to be in the room all the time.
No, they take the picture, then they take the cup. Come on.
I don't think so, Gord.
No, it's not. You can tell the real cup has the Hall of Fame stamp on the bottom, and when it's out, the replica is in place at the Hall of Fame. You can tell the difference. If Basil Pocklington's name is X'd out, that's the authentic Stanley Cup. If it's not X'd out, that's the replica.
Why is that the case?
Peter Pocklington put his dad's name on the cup when the Oilers won in 85, and the engraver X'd it out on the authentic cup.
Good
on
for
the
him.
On the replica. Well, no, the league told him to.
Yeah, you can't have that.
Yeah. On the replica cup, Basil Pocklington's name is not X'd out. That's how you can tell.
Okay. Well, I doubt I'll ever be in a position to actually, corroborate that, but I'll take your word for it.
Thank you.
Jay's Red Sox, we'll get into that just after 5 p.m. We'll get back into the World Cup. Yesterday was a wild, wild game.
And the trade today in the NHL really bugs me.
Yes, we both have some hot takes on the Arizona Coyotes. So we'll tell you about that as well. Overdrive continues on the TSN app. So we were talking about DeMar DeRozan and his Instagram account.
Yeah.
The whole world has changed, right, with social media and in baseball.
I've heard that.
Yeah, I don't know if that's an update for you, but... and I'm pretty sure that's pretty basic comment, but everyone in baseball is focused on the trade deadline, right?
Yep.
Like the first trade deadline.
2 weeks, right?
Yeah, it's in a couple of weeks. And I guess Manny Machado, clearly he's the guy. Like, he's the big fish right now. He's going to get traded. He's out of there in Baltimore. He's not going to re-sign. They're the worst team in the league. And last night, I think it was the Bleacher Report, their Instagram account, posted a picture of him in a Yankee uniform. And he liked the picture.
Oh, God.
So now it's become such a massive story that Manny Machado is basically telling the world that's where he wants to go. Yet he won't, more than likely won't play shortstop if he goes to New York, and he only wants to play shortstop. So it's very complicated, but a like can change the whole context of a conversation.
Remember, Steven Stamkos liked something on Twitter, right? It was out of Toronto.
It was a TSN piece.
Yeah.
It was TSN's Twitter account, and it was something about how Stamkos always loved the Leafs, blah, blah, blah.
And he liked it. And it turned into this big thing, right?
Yeah.
Like Stamkos is coming to Toronto. Like it is funny about that stuff. I mean, can you imagine explaining to baseball players from time gone by, you know, like Bob Gibson, who was like the baseball, who was like the baseball player's baseball player, like wouldn't talk to his National League teammates at the All-Star game. Like wouldn't talk to guys that weren't Cardinals at the All-Star game. So Bob, here's what's happening. This guy liked this thing on Instagram, and he's like, seriously?
That was my reaction. Like, forget that that may be true. What are you telling your team and your teammates and your fans? This is the Yankees in your division. You're a Baltimore Oriole. Like, this isn't like, hey, maybe the San Francisco Giants might be in on you. And it's like, okay, across the country in the other league, this is your biggest rival. And you're liking this? Like, where are we in society? Where are we in the sports world? Like, where's the old school guy that would grab him and be like, are you insane?
And never mind that. You know, the stuff like all the talking for the game and all the hanging out. I mean,
everything has changed.
Like a cocktail party.
Yeah. And look at like guys training in the summer, right? Yeah. Like a hockey world's a perfect example. Go up to a Gary Roberts gym. You see 17 different teams represented. Mm-hmm. They're all up there hanging out, golfing. It's all good. So we'll get into the whole Machado trade deadline stuff just after 5 p.m. We got to talk about this Marian Hossa Coyotes Blackhawks trade, which is just a farce. I mean, it looks so bad on one team in particular. Let me guess. Arizona, probably. So we'll tell you more about that. We'll get into it. Gord Miller's in here. I'm Brian Hayes. Overdrive continues. TSN 1050.
You've been listening to Overdrive, delivered by Skip the Dishes. Skip the Dishes delivers the food you want from the restaurants you love. Place your order using the Skip the Dishes app or online at skipthedishes.com.